Good evening and welcome to the Michigan Science Fiction Writers Series. I'm Stephanie Mattson, Publicity Coordinator for Special Events, and I'm filling in tonight for the series coordinator, Leslie Bame, who unexpectedly had to leave town for a family emergency. Before I introduce tonight's guest, I want to note that novelist Diane Carey will read for this series on Friday, November 19th, same time and same place. That said, it's my pleasure to introduce to you Dave Galanter. Following his reading, Dave will be glad to take your questions for a few minutes. Dave Galanter is a Michigan native who studied journalism at MSU. Over the past decade, he has co-authored several Star Trek projects with Greg Brodeur. Among their titles are the Voyager book Battle Lines and the Next Generation duology Maximum Warp. Dave has also written a few e-books, and most recently his short story 11 Hours Out was included in the Tales of the Dominion War anthology. Dave's not-so-secret fortress of solitude is in Owosso, from where he pretends to have a hand in managing the message board websites he co-owns, comicboards.com and tvshowboards.com. He also edits and is the main contributor to his own website, the political blog snarkbait.com, which I might add has featured some very interesting postings this election year. Dave spends his non-day job time with family and friends, or burying himself in other writing projects, which at some point might actually see the light of day if he ever gets off his duff. I love his irreverence and hope you do too. Now help me please welcome Dave Galanter.
Thank you. Nice to meet you all. Bear with me, since I've never actually read my own stuff in front of, I've read my work because I wrote it, but in front of a group of people. The book that I selected, although this copy is very cat-chewed rather than dog-eared because my cat got to it, it's a Voyager book. It's the favorite of those that I've written. Probably just because it was a challenge. Voyager was a dramatic box to write for because the ship could just leave danger. It was on its way home. It didn't have support. And so Greg and I, when we were coming up with this story, asked ourselves, how can we make this ship that's trapped across the other side of the galaxy, how could we make them stay and have a story somewhere? Rather, when the going got too tough, why didn't the tough just get going? And so what we did was, is we decided very often Janeway and her crew would meet a civilization that was more advanced than hers. And they could play havoc with the ship. We decided that it would be interesting if another culture saw the Voyager as being more technically advanced than they were, and they wanted to impress the Voyager into their fleet to help them with a war they were fighting. That happened at the beginning of this country. The British fleet used to impress American ships into service in the Royal Navy. And so that's what we do with Battle Lines. So titled because in the first five chapters there are five battles. And then it gets exciting somewhat from there. What I've chosen here to read are parts of chapter 3, 6, and the epilogue. That jumps a lot. That's a lot from the beginning of the book and then a little from the end. Mainly because what I wanted to get across is the theme of the book, which I think probably has some relevance for what's happening today. Amazingly enough, this country's in a war, and they're even talking about a draft. Well, some people are talking about a draft. Others are not. And that's what happens in this book. Essentially, Janeway and her crew are drafted into a war, and they don't want to fight it at first, and we think we have one bad guy, and we sort of have another. So I'll start reading, and then I'll probably break up and explain a few things along the way. And I have to explain first that what's happened previous to where I start. Janeway and her ship had just come from fighting another battle with someone we don't even see in the beginning of the book. We just know that their ship is being repaired and it's a little bit damaged. And the Edessians who are our first sort of bad guys, although they turn out to be not so bad, contact Janeway and tell her that they mean her no harm, but they want her ship, which is not something you hear every day, and they're willing to take it by force. And they demand that they are that they meet Janeway on her ship, and she allows them to board a few people. And that's where Chapter 3 begins, and I'll start. This ship will not be boarded. Janeway brought up her own phaser and leveled it at Leckett and Bolas. I am in command here, no one else. Leckett frowned, as if only disappointed in Janeway's actions, but not dissuaded from his own. We don't intend to remove you from command, Captain. We only seek to enlist your help in our time of need. Political cow cookies. Captain Janeway kept her phaser up. Paris had stepped away from Leckett and Bolas and had his phaser raised as well. The only people without weapons drawn were the two Odessians. I'm sorry, Janeway said, but we can't help you. Races that closely resembled humans often had similar body language, and when Leckett sighed, Janeway sensed regret, possibly sorrow, that Voyager's capture wasn't as easy as planned. We're not offering you a choice, Captain. We intend to treat you well, but these are difficult times. That's not seeking to enlist our help, Janeway said harshly. That's a death threat. With a slight nod, Leckett accepted that. As you wish, but many lives have been lost, and many more are sure to pass from us. If threatening you is but one brick in a new foundation of Odessian hope, if together we can save just a few more lives, then I will proudly hold that knife at your throat. Janeway squared her shoulders as if she might have to lunge forward and knock some sense into him. She wouldn't, but tensing her body was somehow an emotional release, and it helped to clear her mind. You can't force us to fight if we refuse. No, I cannot, Leckett said, hands at his sides, an oak of calm and dispassion. But we do not have to treat you with respect, Captain. We'd like to, but we need not. We now grapple for our own survival, and if you choose to fight us rather than join us, we will kill you and your crew and take your ship for our own. The shuttle bay plunged into silence. Her arm bent, Janeway continued to level her phaser evenly at mid-chest level. Or, she said finally, I could destroy my ship now and you with it. She let that thought weigh on the Odessians a moment. Then she cocked her head toward Tuvok without taking her eyes or her weapon off the aliens. How many ships would we maintain tractor beams on while we initiated a self-destruct countdown, she asked. 15, the Vulcan said. And how much damage would the shockwave from our warp core breach cause those ships? Tuvok was matter-of-fact and took no time for calculation. Taking into account the inherent instability I've monitored in their various types of warp drive, I believe they would all be destroyed in a chain reaction subspace explosion. Captain Janeway allowed herself the slightest of checkmate smiles. Maybe we're worth one or two of your ships, she said, but are we worth 15 or 20? Leckett shook his head and looked to Bolas. Proceed. His fingers on a pendant around his neck, Bolas pressed a button and spoke. Begin. Janeway felt her brow furrow. Begin what? A moment later, the computer alert system explained. Warning, level 1 radiation contamination. Warning, dangerous levels of radiation detected. Warning. The captain shared a glance with her tactical officer. Apparently, they can control the radiation output of their warp dampening device, Tuvok said, punctuating the obvious with his cool explanation. Janeway outstretched her arm, leveling her weapon at Leckett's head. Tell them to stop. The warning continued. In 3 minutes, Leckett said flatly, every living thing on this ship will be dead. If you stand down from a defensive posture, your life and the lives of your ship will be spared. If you attempt to destroy your ship, we will increase the contamination and all will be dead in a matter of moments. Edging her words around the angry lump in her throat, Janeway ground out a demand. Tell me how you can claim not to want to harm anyone and still do this. Leckett gave an elaborate shrug. The same way you can threaten to do such a thing to your own ship and people, Captain. We are all animals. He gestured to her phaser, then motioned his hand around to occlude the entire ship. Our teeth are sharper, of course. Our muscles are stronger as we cloak our physical weakness in technology. But we're still just brutes fighting for survival. Sometimes we forget that because we're not always so raw as in war. His voice was thick with self-pity and perhaps even disgust. But captains like us would be wise to remember there is no such thing as civilization. We play at civilization, Captain, like children who put on their parents' clothes and pretend to be adults, like an angry monster might delude himself into imagining a mirror reflection of unique beauty. His jaw tensed, and he looked as if he might spit his own words onto the deck. Lies, Captain, all lies. We are beasts and must live our lives as such. Warning, level 1 radiation contamination. Warning, dangerous levels of radiation detected. Warning. You'll die with us in any case, Janeway rasped. Yes, he said. She lowered her phaser and let it dangle useless at her side. Tell them to stop, she whispered. Lekid nodded and Bolas spoke. Cease. Warning, level 1 radiation contamination. Radiation level dropping. Condition yellow. Some of your crew will need to undergo decontamination, perhaps even ourselves, Luckett said. Janeway nodded. She'd been outbluffed, but she'd taken steps for even this contingency, and while this round was lost, the fight would go on. Luckett stooped and retrieved the packet Janeway had dropped. He handed it back to her, and when she refused to accept it, he held it close to his tunic. Lieutenant Bolas here will need to review your computer record banks, your crew roster, and your ship status reports, and so on. Janeway nodded, holstered her phaser. We will shuttle over several guards, but you and your crew will be allowed to man their usual stations with some guidance. My crew won't be loyal to you, Janeway said. She had to keep herself from nearly growling her words. You will remain in command of your vessel, Captain, and I will make this my flagship, commanding the battle from here. Your crew will follow your orders, and you will follow mine. She could stun them both now, put them in the brig. And then what? She'd promised to see her crew home. This was now a major, perhaps final, detour. Captain Janeway nodded very slowly. For now, she would do as she is asked. Only for now. You have a fine ship here, Captain, Luckett said. It is not my intention to lose it. We've sacrificed much to add your vessel to our force. I will act to keep it safe. Janeway hammered Luckett with an angry glare and stepped toward him. Oh, so will I. You have my word on it. The bridge. Intruders were a violation, and somehow the situation felt more desperate now than it had an hour earlier. Janeway had allowed Luckett to shuttle his soldiers aboard, and now the ship seemed farther from home than ever before. Bolas, obviously Leckett's right-hand man, hovered over Tuvok's console. Vulcan stood by and watched the alien's doings. Breaking her from thought, Ensign Kim handed Janeway an information pad. She thought his tight frame broadcast the entire crew's anxiety, or perhaps she was just reading her own burden into his posture. She took the computer display board from him, glanced over the information, and gave him an encouraging nod. This isn't over, she thought. We're not done fighting. Leckett pulled the pad from Janeway's hand. He placed one of the pendants that hung around his neck on the computer board, then handed the pad back and looked at his necklace as if it were a stopwatch. Our secondary power is restored, Janeway told Leckett. He nodded. So I see. Then you also see we can't get warp power online with your warp dampening device active. Leckett's lips were cold slices that arched upward, a chilling, emotionless smile. Lieutenant Bolas, he prompted. Bolas turned from Tuvok's tactical station and stood at attention. The warp dampener will not hamper warp power from being restored, only your creation of a warp field. You can restore power with the dampening process in effect by using matter-antimatter intermix settings previously calculated. Nodding, Leckett took one step toward Janeway. Yours is a brave lie, Captain, but your engineers no doubt are aware of that process. You must employ it quite often, in fact, during battle, unless you calculate an intermix ratio every time you increase warp speed. He knew a lot, maybe not about Voyager, but about warp vessels and battleships. She wanted him off her bridge, off her ship. Not likely to happen anytime soon. There was an Odysseyan guard at every turbolift, not only on the bridge, but throughout Voyager. All phasers had been confiscated from the crew. The crewmen not on duty were confined to quarters. Bolas stood next to Tuvok and Leckett stood next to Janeway. Their every move was watched. No whisper was safe, no action unguarded. Chakotay was in engineering and had reported even more Odysseans down there. Janeway had covertly ordered him and Torres to delay repairs as long as they could. The way repair reports were coming in, they weren't having much luck. The Odysseans had a knack for alien technology. They were learning the ship, and eventually Janeway and her crew would become expendable. Tuvok stepped down to the command deck and faced Janeway. Captain, all but four of the other Edessan vessels have retreated to positions off our long-range sensors. Janeway looked to Leckett, who was glancing toward the forward viewer. He nodded, his expression as stoic and distant as the starscape at which he stared. 5 ships in a battle squadron, he said. You are now the lead ship. If you attempt escape, radiation levels will again reach critical. He turned, looked down at her. I assure you, Captain, there is no chance of your flight from this matter. At that, Janeway frowned. Hope springs eternal, she thought, but there was a bitter rock in her stomach which pressed down on any confidence she might be able to muster. The command chair was her only comfort, and even that was slight. She gripped onto the arms and told herself there was still much to be tried, much to be done, before things were truly hopeless. Her deep regret was that she couldn't communicate that to her crew. What if you die in battle, and with you the control of the radiation, she asked. Again, Leckett's flat expression, seemingly without feeling at all. If I die, Captain, the radiation will trigger instantly, and you will all die. It is within your best interest to protect me, Captain. The Edessians had done this before and planned for every alternative. Have the other ships been shanghaied too? Is that your hold on them as well? Leckett frowned, his lips becoming a drooping line. You will know things when they are important for you to know. Know thy enemy, Janeway said, is a saying from my homeworld. We need to know what we're supposed to fight. You will eventually, Leckett said grimly. You'll know, and like me, you'll wish you didn't. I'll stop for a minute and explain a little bit about more what's going on. And I forgot to mention something, but it seems pretty obvious from what I read. In order to trap the Voyager, they've placed this piece of technology on their hull that stops them from going anywhere if the Edessians don't want. And by the way, at the time I worked for EDS, so the evil people were called the Edessians. I do that sometimes. The piece of technology is a way to keep them from going anywhere. It was part of that box that Voyager had. Didn't want them to leave. So we just made it so that the bad guys made it so they couldn't leave. Easy enough. The other part is, and I don't get into the description of it, but I start soon after it, the Edessians are very afraid of their enemies, the Gimlin. The Gimlin have this marauder, this giant ship, that chews up other ships almost instantly and then disappears in the blink of an eye. And with that disappearance, there's an incredible amount of destruction. When I pick up the story here, that's just happened. The Marauder destroyed some of the other Edessian ships, hurt Voyager, which, if the technology of the Gimlin is supposed to be equal to the Edessians, they shouldn't have been able to hurt the Voyager very much. But they did, so something's going on here. And Janeway gets an idea of why Leckett and Bolas are so afraid and why they really feel they need her help, even if they have to force her. So we'll pick it up there. They've just seen the Marauder disappear, and this giant, massive ship has just disappeared in a sort of cataclysm, which has just disrupted all of space around it. Captain's log, supplemental. Met by 2 Edessian escorts, we are slowly leaving the sector where the Gimlin Marauder disappeared. In an effort to determine the Gimlin's method of cloak, Ensign Kim and Lieutenant Commander Tuvok continue to scan the area for evidence of the enemy ship. So far, there's no sign at all. Such a complete cloak is unheard of in our technology. Commendations to Commander Chakotay, Lieutenant Torres, 7 of 9, Crewman Chen, Crewman Lothridge, Crewman Rossi, Damage Control Teams 1 and 3, and the on-duty bridge crew. Scan it again. Janeway massaged her shoulder. She'd fallen hard a few dozen times, it seemed, but didn't want to take the time to zip down to sickbay. It's there, somewhere. Scanning. Ensign Kim had swept for the Marauder 14 times, and all searches had been fruitless. Nothing, Captain, and we're getting too distant for short-range scans. Where? Where had the ship gone? No cloak was that good. There had always been some flaw in the Romulan and Klingon cloaks Janeway was used to. The problem was usually not having time to see the flaw. Captain Janeway glared at the stars on the forward viewer, as if she might see the Marauder as Voyager sped away from the now empty system. Their propulsion was damaged, she said. We should be able to at least see radiation and plasma residue. We should, Tuvok said. However, the substantial gravimetric disruptions rendered our sensors useless for a short time, once we lost the trail and with sensors in their current state. Disheartened, Janeway nodded. Cancel scanning, log the data we have, and pore over it. How sure are we of our current sensor readings? Not very, Kim said, obviously disappointed in his own answer. A lot of circuits are burned out. We've had to reroute to systems that have nothing to do with sensors. I can't be sure of our accuracy. What are we sure of? Kim wouldn't say. He looked at Tuvok, whose eyes widened a bit as he spoke. The Gimlin ship has disappeared in a manner our science cannot at this time determine. Magic, Paris said corrosively, pecking at his console with one hand, cradling his other arm in his lap. Janeway pursed her lips and turned to Leckett. How do we know we didn't destroy it then? No one thought that that was the case, but for there was no debris. But it was a notion that had to be considered. Down in Janeway's stomach, however, she was building a base for understanding Leckett's fear. How could anyone fight an invisible monster? If the Marauder could disappear, then later reappear. Leckett was silent. He continued to look at the main viewer in the empty space on which Janeway had focused a moment before. They both wanted to see the Gimlon warship. If they could see it, they could defeat it. Leckett had known the Marauder would disappear. He'd known, and he hadn't wanted to tell Janeway. Why? We'd better talk. Janeway grabbed Leckett at the elbow and motioned him toward her office. The Commodore nodded lightly, and they stepped up the bridge and through the sliding door into the captain's ready room. Neither of them sat. Janeway stood behind her desk, and Leckett took a defeated posture before her. His shoulders were slumped, his features sharp and dark. She realized he needed a shave. I couldn't tell you, he admitted suddenly without prompt. Janeway listened, asking nothing more. She'd hear him out, then continue. Commodore Leckett stroked his chin stubble nervously, then groped for a chair behind him and sat clumsily down. We needed to see you fight the Gimlin on your own terms, with more or less your own tactics, just as you did. We've lost too many impressed vessels by confiscating technology only. We needed you in whole, not just your ship, but your experience. You'd said that. Janeway leaned down across her desk, flattening her palms over its surface. Now explain why we couldn't know what we were up against. Leckett was slow to answer. Was he looking for the right words, or was he looking for the right lie? Captain, he began, never in our history have we been defeated so. Janeway looked away and pulled herself into an upright position. Her neck and shoulder still ached, as did most every muscle. But she refrained from showing any kind of weakness by rubbing her soreness. She's sore in a less physical manner, too. And the last thing she wanted to hear was an imperial sob story about how tough the conquering game had become. Is this about arrogance, revenge? No, Captain, it's not. She turned back to look at him and slapped him with a disbelieving glare. I assure you, Leckett said, this has nothing to do with personal or cultural ego. When I say that we have never been so defeated, I mean so completely, and by such a weapon as the Gimlon have. You seem to be faring better than you say. Leckett shook his head. Captain Janeway, the ships that stopped you are all that's left of a fleet of 373 vessels. We have been reduced from a space fleet to a band of weak ships in just over a month. At this, Janeway was taken aback, and a slight chill ran her spine. A fleet of nearly 400 cut down to less than 30 in a month. Not since the Borg attack at Wolf 359 had she heard of such a force, if it were true. Her mind's eye lingered on the scenes of destruction hers and other ships had found at Wolf 359. Starships sliced in half, blown into three or four chunks of debris that floated eerily together, not a ship's graveyard, but a death-filled morgue. Staggering, isn't it, Captain? Leckett asked, his voice dry and low. Why couldn't you tell us about this cloak of theirs? You think it's a cloak, Leckett said. I wish I could believe that. In any case, last time we told an impressed ship of this, they refused to fight it. The time before, they panicked in battle and were quickly destroyed. Janeway swiveled the desktop computer screen toward her and punched up the small amount of data Voyager had on the Gimlin Marauder. It's not magic, she said. His eyes red, Leckett rubbed his temples with both hands. If you have a better term, Captain, I'd like to hear it. We can't even tell you any more than you already know, because many of our scientists think the Marauder doesn't actually disappear, that it's some form of mind control. we can't risk tainting your thoughts. Mind control? Janeway made no attempt to disguise her skeptical tone. If you can question whether mind control is happening, chances are you can either prove that it isn't or end it. Then I ask you to explain it, Captain, Leckett snapped, his anger boiling over his mental exhaustion for a moment. Scanners show nothing, no debris, no unusual radiation. Your sensors must have been overloaded as ours, Janeway began. Yes, more so, when an Indesian vessel has survived, which isn't often. Voyager had been a match for the Marauder. If it hadn't had the magic to disappear. You told me it would return, Janeway said. How soon? Soon. We never know when. Will they have repaired themselves? Leckett chuckled softly and bitterly. We've never done much damage to it, Captain. And now my ship has. Looking almost encouraged, Leckett glanced up at her, as if he'd forgotten that point. Yes, and we are grateful. Janeway dismissed the notion with a harsh look. Please, Commodore, I don't need the superfluous platitudes. We did this for you because we were forced to. You would have had us destroy the ship. You should have, Captain. It would be all over if you had. She shook her head. Yes, it would be all over. And as I said before, I don't just kill people without provocation. Leckett straightened. Neither do I, he said indignantly. I am provoked by Gimlin atrocities, mass murder, tearing children from families and killing them all, rumor of medical experience, suffering beyond imagination. So you say, Commodore, and I'm supposed to take it all based on faith? She felt her face flush as a ball of anger caught in her throat. I don't have faith in a man who has threatened the lives of my crew and still holds an axe over my head. We've done what we could, and now I demand you release us. The Commodore shook his head. I cannot. No, Janeway didn't think he would. She looked at him, stared him down some, tried to focus her peak into a battle against her muscle aches. She needed a better strategy than sit and wait. Where are we headed, she asked. Perhaps caught off guard by the question, Leckett looked startled and he leaned back in his chair. The Resilian system, one of our few colony worlds. Resilian 2 has a docking port where your ship will be repaired. And studied, Janeway thought. As I said, you'll be treated well, Captain, but there is yet a role for your vessel in our struggle. Janeway's door chime sounded and she responded, Enter. Tuvok stepped in. I have casualty and repair reports, Captain. I leave you to the dignity to discuss these matters in private, Leckett said, gathering himself rather majestically as he rose and exited the room. The office door slid closed and Janeway expressed her surprise in a glance to Tuvok. Apparently he believes we cannot plot an escape, offered the Vulcan. She nodded a half shrug. Or he's listening with some device. Tuvok slid easily into one of the chairs in front of Janeway's desk and swiveled her computer toward him. His fingers worked quickly on the keypad, and the console bleeped in happy response. Now, he said, we should be relatively safe from any electronic listening ears. Janeway widened her eyes. Only relatively? I cannot anticipate a technology dissimilar to ours. If they have a method with which I'm unfamiliar. She nodded. Of course. Casualties were light, Tuvok began. Minor injuries on most decks. One crewman is refusing to report to sickbay, however. The captain allowed a slight smile. I'll go when I'm ready. The Vulcan shook his head. While I could certainly be referring to you, I did not think it my place to counsel you on such a personal action. Rather, I leave tending of your minor injuries to your discretion. I was speaking of Lieutenant Paris. He insists that he should finish his shift, and I did not press the matter with him, but he's holding his wrist at an angle. It might be broken. She nodded again. He and I will see the doctor together. Very well. Tuvok handed a pad to Janeway and continued, a list of damaged systems and repair estimates. Janeway took the pad, skimmed its contents, then laid it flat on her desktop. She looked back to Tuvok's calm expression. He was an anchor at times like this, his visage not much changed from when they might play cribbage in the officer's lounge. This isn't a game of cribbage, she said suddenly. His eyebrows rose. No. Indeed not. Cribbage is a rather simple game. I still fail to see why you enjoy such low-skilled diversion. She smiled again. He probably just didn't like the game because there was so much luck involved. Skill hadn't often determined the winner. It's the company, not the cards. He gestured his acceptance of that. If I may extend the metaphor, I believe we are ahead on points, even though it may not seem that is the case. I agree, Janeway said, rubbing the scabbed gash in her hand as it began to itch. But how far do we want to take this? If we let them repair our vessel, if they learn too much about the ship and how it runs, We risk them simply killing us and using our technology. That was always an option to them, but they are more desperate, I think. I don't believe they have time to train a crew for a ship of our technological level. Maybe. And, Tuvok added, they don't know about the command codes, or our self-destruct procedure, or many things. Janeway put up her hand. Self-destruct is our last option. I won't honestly consider it at this point. Tuvok nodded very slightly. Janeway had come to learn that with him such was an expression of respectful disagreement. You'd destruct now? No, he said. But I suggest we also cannot dismiss the option so quickly that we don't consider it at all. This vessel is being used as a weapon by a warring culture. That is not a situation we can morally allow to continue. People, Janeway said, and ships have been drafted into military service in almost every culture, including my own. Starfleet even has a reserve activation clause. As I recall, the oath we took with Starfleet includes the possibility that reserve activation might be necessitated, Tuvok said. I submit there is a distinct moral difference between coercing an innocent to participate in forceful action and requiring that someone fulfill a previously agreed upon consensual contract. Janeway gestured her agreement and massaged her shoulder. Of course, one might also suggest that the law of this space applies to us so long as we are within its boundaries. Captain cocked her head to one side. Playing devil's advocate, Mr. Tuvok? I would not advocate any position but reasoned debate. Logic suggests that if we abide by one culture's laws while in their jurisdiction, we must abide by every culture's laws while in their respective jurisdictions. No, that's not logical at all. Tuvok's expression was one of sincere and respectful surprise. How so? We can't be expected to change our value system every time we cross a border. If the murder of innocence is wrong in one place, it's wrong in every place. The definition of innocence, and indeed values, changes from culture to culture, Tuvok said. That's not relevant. You can call the sun cold, but that doesn't lower its temperature. Look at your logic, Tuvok, Janeway said. Is it logical to change your values based merely on your location and the conclusions of others? The Vulcan thought for a moment. No, logic is simply the act of non-contradictory concept formation. Reason applied to base perceptions. One's location cannot change one's moral values if those values were logically chosen. He nodded his assent. Your point is well made. Janeway took that as the highest possible compliment. I think you ended up making it for me, but thank you. Rising, Janeway looked out the porthole window and the stars flying by. We need a plan, Mr. Tuvok. I concur. She pinned her attention on one star and followed it away until it disappeared in the distance. But I want to know if we've acted on behalf of an evil empire or on a defending homeworld. If we've caused the deaths of innocents. Captain Janeway looked down at her hand and the blood-caked scab of her injury. Whose blood is on my hands? I need to know that. Our hands, Tuvok said, and I must know as well. The captain turned and gave him an encouraging nod, even though he didn't need it. If we've been fighting for the wrong side, and I think it possible, Commodore Leckett will have more problems than he ever bargained for. That's the end of the beginning of the book, sort of. It sets up what's going on. I don't know if I should give the book away, but I sort of have to, a little bit. It was my determination to bring up a couple of themes in this book. One was, can you be morally impressed into somebody else's military? My personal point of view is no. So that's what I had Janeway and Tuvok discussing. But it was important to me to have them discuss it, not just decide that it's no and move on from there. I wanted them to think about it. But it was also important to me that Leckett was not a bad guy. He was just a very desperate guy. And we later find out in the book that not only are the Gimlin sort of like Nazis, but it's not all of the Gimlin that are Nazis. It's their government. And the Gimlin people aren't to be blamed. Just like the people that the Gimlin military kills aren't to be blamed for what's undergoing them, or that Janeway isn't really to be blamed for what's happening to her. But she decides at a certain point that Leckett's battle is a worthy one, and she decides to help him. Not because he's forcing her to, but because she thinks It's right. She watches at a certain point as 3 billion people are killed by this Gimlun marauder, and she decides that that's a price too high to pay, and they have to be stopped. Because where would the Gimlun go after they had destroyed the Edessians? They might come after the Federation. I won't give away how she ends up defeating them, but she does. And to her, that's something. She certainly keeps the Gimlun from destroying the Edessian, and she and Lackett managed to convince the Edessians not to go and destroy the rest of the Gimlun, which is one of her goals. Because as things look desperate, the Edessians want to make it mutually assured destruction. And that's where the epilogue picks up. So this is sort of the end of the book. But it plays back on some things, some themes that are brought up in what I've read. And I'll continue from there. They're around the Edessian homeworld. It's a beautiful planet. You really should see it, Chakotay said. Janeway viewed the planet from her office window as it spun slowly below her and felt like that was enough. I can see it from here, she said finally, absentmindedly trying to do the shoulder exercises the doctor had recommended. A week had passed and she was still stiff, probably tension, but she wasn't about to tell the doctor that. He'd find a way to order her to the planet for R&R and she didn't want to be there. Chakotay stepped closer into the room and laid a data pad on her desk. I think I understand, he said. I haven't actually spent much time down there either, except to debrief some of the Gimlun captures. Looks like we were right about the Marauder's core being alien technology. Apparently the thing appeared in Gimlun space a few months ago. They discovered its power and began their war of conquest. Its debris is still appearing in and out of space in that region. Tuvok says it might indefinitely. She nodded, still staring at the planet below. 3 billion people died on a similar planet, all Edessians. To see those who survived, even in her mind, would only remind her of those she couldn't save, didn't save. How's the refit going, she asked on the trail of a sigh. Fine. The Edessians are better hosts than taskmasters. We're almost completely repaired. The warp dampening device is finally off the hull, and the hull plates are being repaired as well. Chakotay motioned toward the pad as she turned from the window. With the Edessians' abundance of antimatter and their ability to duplicate our torpedo containers, we have a full complement of working torpedoes again. Unfortunately, we'll have occasion to use them, she said, and allowed just a little too much bitterness to tinge her voice. Captain Chakotay began slowly, stepping closer to her desk. You saved many more than those you couldn't. She lowered herself into their desk chair and dismissed his comment with a wave of her hand. I know, I know. And yet somehow that didn't matter. The chime at her door sounded. Come, she said. Tuvok stepped into her office, Lackett behind him. Commodore Lackett would like to see you, Captain. She nodded, and the Vulcan led Lackett in. Commodore, she greeted and gestured him to a chair. Lackett spoke. Mr. Lackett, he corrected, not Commodore. I have returned to my duties as husband, father, and grandfather, and I found out yesterday great-grandfather. How old are you, Janeway asked. Will your translator convert the years? I am 83. He wasn't young. He only looked it. Ere she thought he might be like Cass, only a few years old. No accounting for looks. Lackett looked 25 and had great-grandchildren. Congratulations, Mr. Lackett, Janeway said, but found it difficult to smile. I thank you for your appeals to the Edessian government not to destroy what is left of the Gimlun. I only hope that standard is maintained. It is my hope as well, Lackett said. He seemed a different man. He was a grandfather, a great-grandfather, not a soldier, and suddenly he seemed more natural, more at peace with himself. Janeway hoped her peace would return soon. Captain, Lackett said as he stood, I wanted to see my great-grandchild first, and I have done that. Now I wish to offer myself to you and the authority of your government for my crimes against you and your vessel and her crew. I alone wish to represent the Edessian government in this matter. The captain looked at him, head to toe, then looked into his glistening eyes. Something within her said that he had petitioned his government to do this, that they had neither required his sacrifice nor sanctioned it. My government is 60 years from here, she said. You want to be locked in this ship's brig for 60 years? Lackett looked back into her eyes. Yes, Captain, I am prepared for that. And he probably was. She believed him now. He was a man of honesty, thrown into a position he had not enjoyed and had not thought himself worthy of. By war, he didn't want to force others to fight. "Prepare yourself for this," Janeway said, standing. "I'm placing you on parole. I want you to stay and protect your family and your people from another war with the Gimlin, which I would expect to happen if nothing changes in the way Odessians deal with their enemies." Luckett looked perplexed. "I'm not sure I understand." "When we first met, you said we were all animals, Luckett. You said we only play at civilization. Maybe you've been, but I haven't, and I want you to stop," she said, flattening her hands on the desk and leaning toward him. "We're not animals, and neither are you. We have volition, Luckett. We can have control, and I want you to change things for your people. I want you to make sure the Odessians don't punish the Gimlin people for a war their leaders waged. I want you to fight for a legitimate government for them, not just for you. They have the right to liberty, just like you and just like me. Freedom isn't for those with the power. It's for those without the power as well." She glanced at Tuvok a moment, then caught Luckett's eyes again. "A friend and I once debated the idea that right and wrong and liberty might depend on the culture and perhaps didn't apply to all sentient beings. I don't believe that, and I don't think you do either." I have never thought about it," Luckett admitted. "Start thinking," Janeway said, straightening. Luckett lowered his head in a slow nod. "I was wrong to take your freedom from you, Captain. I do realize that, and I am sorry." "Prove it to me, Luckett. Change your people's ways. Make sure it doesn't happen again. Fight for your liberty, yes, but fight for mine as well, and for the Gimlins." She motioned with her hand, taking in Chakotay and Tuvok and her entire ship with one gesture. "As we fought for yours." "I will try," Captain Luckett said sincerely. "But I am one man, and my people are stubborn." "You're one man," Janeway said. "Now go convince a second, and a third, and the three of you go convince others. All you need is one man with an idea, with reason on his side, and with liberty as his goal. Fight for it, Luckett. Teach it to your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and for pity's sake, teach it to the Gimlin. They'll grasp it. All you have to do is ask them to think. And they can do that. We all can. We wouldn't have the ability to be out here if we couldn't." Luckett nodded again, very slowly, very deliberately. "You are most wise, Captain." "No, I just use my reason as best I can. Your sentence is to do the same, and to make others do that as well." The Odessian held out his hand. "I will, Captain. You have my word." Janeway took his hand and held it firmly. "Good luck, Mr. Luckett. Thank you, Captain, for everything." He released her hand, and Chakotay saw him out the door. Tuvok remained a few feet from Janeway's desk, and she looked up at him a moment. "Something wrong, Mr. Tuvok?" The Vulcan, hands behind his back, walked smoothly toward her desk. "I'm impressed. You have been just, and in doing so might just spread that justice to two peoples who otherwise would have extinguished one another. You are, in fact, most wise." "I don't feel like it," she said, and turned her neck to stretch her aching muscles. "I don't think I'd make a very good Vulcan. I feel very sad." "Why?" She looked at him, but her mind's eye conjured up billions of faces she didn't know, could now never know. "There's really no justice here, Tuvok," she said. "Too many people are dead to satisfy justice." "Captain, the battle is ended," Tuvok said. "Those who have done wrong have paid for their crimes." The captain shook her head. "No, Tuvok, debt remains. And in that, there is only shallow victory." He paused. Vulcans rarely touched others to lend them support, but in his voice she heard his hand on her shoulder. "Perhaps, but your words reached Luckett, and he might very well change the future." Janeway lowered herself into a chair and swiveled to see out the window. She watched as the top of a beautiful blue planet spun slowly on its axis. "Maybe," she agreed. "We'll have to have faith in that, I guess." "No, Captain," Tuvok said, his voice smooth and quiet. "Not faith, but confidence. Based on the evidence that you and I and those like us may struggle to find civilization in the chaos, but we do indeed find it, within ourselves and others throughout the galaxy. You said it yourself, if one can think logically enough to conquer space, one can grasp the reason of liberty as well. Why must they grasp it so late? Why must innocent people die?" She wasn't asking him, she was lamenting reality. "The answer is complex," he said. She smiled up at him. He'd managed to break through her tension just a little, and she smiled because the universe didn't look all that glum anymore. "And tomorrow would be better," she knew. "You're a good friend, Tuvok," but the question was rhetorical. He cocked his head slightly, looked a bit puzzled. "Thank you. I was not attempting to be amusing or friendly. I was merely..." "Mr. Tuvok?" "Yes, Captain." She stood, her data pad in hand, and walked toward the door. Sometimes it's okay just to nod when someone asks a rhetorical question. The door opened and she stepped out, motioning for him to join her. "I fail to understand," he began, how you can maintain such a rational philosophy and then indulge in something as irrational as a rhetorical question. If you do not wish the question answered, why ask it?" Janeway strode to her command chair and lowered herself easily into the soft but strong lines of the center seat. Standing to one side, Tuvok looked at his captain a moment, as she tried very hard not to look him in the eyes. Finally, he spoke. "Captain, did you hear me?" "Yes, Mr. Tuvok, but I thought your question was rhetorical." Tuvok pressed his lips into a thin line, the equivalent of a Vulcan sigh, and retired to his station. On the forward view screen, the Odessian homeworld sparkled up at her. Lights brilliantly showed through the darkness of an Odessian night, cities filled with people who didn't die. Somewhere on that planet, a child was laughing, family was eating dinner, people were playing games and were happy. Somewhere below her, someone was giving birth. Someone was dying naturally. It was raining somewhere on that planet. And somewhere else, a small animal was rolling on the ground, enjoying the sunshine. She pushed away her dark thoughts because the universe still held too much light. "Maybe I will beam down," she said, mostly to herself, "just to feel their Earth, if not my own, under my feet." And that's it. Thank you. Maybe that has relevance today as to what's going on in the world. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's just a Star Trek book. That's mostly what it is. But science fiction has relevance in all of our lives if it's about people that are like us. It's why science fiction with aliens that are too alien maybe doesn't connect to us as much, because they're not enough like us. It's why all of the aliens, whether they have six arms or two arms or crinkled stuff on their nose, they've got human-ish emotions, or the lack thereof, so that we can see the contrast with our own. That's why science fiction works, I think. And I'll open the floor to any questions that there might be. But I'm going to get some water, too. Or there might not be questions. Sure.
How did you balance Janeway's... Well, I think that Janeway's a very determined person, but she's also very idealistic.
Yes.
So how did you balance those two things in the story, or could you find a balance?
It's difficult to find a balance with Janeway. But both worked in this book, I think. Mind you, some of her voice was mine. I'm a very idealistic person myself. It's one of the reasons I actually like Janeway. I dislike that very often in Star Trek, the women have had backseat roles. I like that that she was up front in Voyager. I just wish they had done better story-wise sometimes as far as the show is concerned. It's a difficult balance, but they also complement each other. If you're determined, you stay idealistic. That's what she does in this book. She manages, well, you could disagree, that's all right. She manages to keep her idealism by being determined about it. She uses both her determination and her idealism not as a weakness, but as a strength. I've thought way too much about Janeway, haven't I? I actually, if I may, I had a female line editor for this book. And there was a scene in here where I had Leckett stop her from being very angry. And she said, "Don't do that. Don't have a man stop her from doing anything." And I had, as a man, had not thought about it, because I was not writing her as a woman. I was writing her as a captain. A captain who happened to be a woman, but to me the important part was the captain. And she was actually right. I can see where there were men who would say, "See, Janeway has to be stopped by a man from overreacting." So instead what I did was is I put the strength into her and said she wanted to overreact, but she decided against it. She decided not to essentially beat the bejesus out of Leckett at one point. I had Tuvok actually stopping her and changed it after my editor spoke to me about it, and I said, "Well, she decides not to do it," which was actually probably better for the character. I don't know if that answered your question, but the baby feels that I did. Yes?
And just one, given something we talked about in your interview, and then also fact that you mentioned the history of the British Navy, the Royal Navy, impressing American ships into service for Her Majesty's Navy, or His Majesty's Navy, actually, pre-revolutionary America. Are you a big history buff?
I enjoy history. I don't know how if I say I'm a big history buff or not. Probably more than some. I am glued to the History Channel and History International. I have a lot of history books. I actually, more than revolutionary history, I tend to like ancient history more. But it just seemed the proper analogy at that time. But yeah, history, history does repeat itself sometimes. But it's a way also to look at who we are as humans. We haven't changed necessarily much, and yet we've changed a lot in a lot of good ways. So, yeah, I like history. Anything else? Yeah.
Well, I have a question, but I have a comment. That is that having watched Voyager and all the other Star Trek shows, I'm quite impressed with how well you've written the dialogue.
Tuvok's easy for me. I really liked the Tuvok character. My personal philosophy is one of reason and logic. So those lines wrote themselves for me. I watched the show while I was writing the book. I would have videotapes of the show and put them on and in order to get the dialogue right, and I do that whether I'm writing Picard or whomever, I have to hear him speaking in order to, and also I've watched enough by now that it's not that hard. I'm waiting for hopefully for Christmas, the original series DVDs, because if I'm going to write Kirk, which I hope to at some point, I'm going to have to try and get his line down. I don't think watching Boston Legal is going to quite do it for me.
Star Trek writers, do they have any influence on this story or your writing at all?
Diane Carey has been an influence on my style in that she taught me how to write. you're gonna meet her, I guess, next month, is it? Okay.
November 19th.
She's a very good friend of mine. I've known Greg. Greg, the guy who I co-wrote this with, is Diane's husband. I've known them since I was 16 years old. So they are brother and sister to me. And Diane had a big hand in my style by saying, reading my stuff and having the just tremendous generosity to say that you're doing this wrong in a nice way, because trust me, writers are absolutely paranoid about their work. And she was as nice as could be, and still I was crushed. When I was young, mind you, when I was 17, 18 years old. But she was very helpful, and I learned immensely from her. So she's had a lot of, influence. Other writers? I don't read a lot of Star Trek books, unfortunately. I read my friends' Star Trek books. Bob Greenberger, Keith DeCandido, I've read their books because they're friends of mine. Mike Friedman. I've read some of Peter David's stuff. Peter and I are so political opposites, I don't know how close friends we are, but we see each other at conventions and we like one another and we joke with one another, and he's a good guy. And I've enjoyed his stuff too. So in that I steal from them sometimes. If you like something that Picard does in a certain mannerism, I might pick it up. I don't write it down knowingly know it, but I say, I like what he did there. I'm going to try and copy that. Imzadi, which was written by Peter David. I know that when I'm writing Riker and Troy in the TNG books that I've written, he's as an absolute influence. So there's an influence there. I don't read a lot of the stuff. The biggest influence for me is watching the shows. And hopefully that's why people say, hey, that seemed like the characters. But you know, it's a mixed bag. I've had people on Amazon.com say, you nailed these characters, and in another review say, those were nothing like the characters. You're nuts. So everybody has their own subjective opinion, and I don't take anything too personally. But if I get overwhelming comments about something, you did this or you did that. By the way, I think, was this book? Somebody had some problem with this book. I forget exactly what it was, and they were absolutely right, and I felt bad about it after. And they sent me an email, and I sent them one back saying, good call, I missed that. So people reading also have an influence, more than anything.
Thank you.
That's all right. Thank you. I enjoyed it.